Okay. I would like to open up by sharing something that's important in itself. Maybe if you move the flowers, yeah. Okay, so there's some real big idea that I would like to share to the best of my ability. As an intro, I want to speak about something that is important in itself. And that is the power and importance of our Jewish names. I'm sharing this because we're going to share a discourse of the first Rebbe, of the Alter Rebbe, that is discussing why is it that prior to the birth of Yitzchak, as a prerequisite to the birth of Yitzchak, there was a name change made both with Avram to Avraham, and there was a name change made from Sarai to Sarah. So I want to speak as an intro about names, but I'm getting into a topic which I think is way bigger than names, but let's begin with the names. A name isn't only a name. The way the soul connects to us, and I'm wording it purposefully that way, there are some greater people, which I'm not, which they fully identify themselves with their neshama, and that's truthful for them. I'm not talking in the brain, their experience, and the I is the soul, and then there is, you know, my body or my consciousness or my animal soul. Most of us are not there yet, as the Alter Rebbe beautifully explains, and that's the way to speak, that there is the me, and then there is a neshama that I have, part of our prayers, Elikai Neshama Shanosata Bi, God, we begin in the mornings. The soul that you put in me, well, I'm beginning the day with humility, not with the arrogance. No, I'm the soul. The body that you gave me, no. Me is my body, me is my animal soul. Just for people that are not familiar with that term, it's not a derogatory term at all. It's a mystical term in which we will call, let's use psychological words, ego, the ego, the consciousness will be called the animal soul. And in it, there is a piece of God himself. And the way the neshama connects to the body, which is something that has to be addressed because the gap between the soul and the rest of us is infinite, not big, infinite. The soul is God. God is infinite. We don't understand infinite. We are we. We might be great, which we are. We might be limited, which we are. But it's something. And to bridge that gap, a name is needed. And we're not going to speak about that, which is a beautiful topic of how language works. How does the holy tongue, Hebrew, work? The function of the letters, this is, a big part of Kabbalah deals with this area of knowledge. But I'm just going with the premise, take it or leave it, that our Hebrew name, and that specifically means my Hebrew name, the son of or the daughter of the name of my mother. That's my name. My name, Bas, your mother's name. For a man, Ben, the mother's name. That is the name. It doesn't define the soul, but it's a medium, it's a channel through which the neshama connects to the body. So as an example, the Arizal wrote a whole book about who was the reincarnation of whom. Leave it to him. So Hevel and Moshe Rabbeinu and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai were the same, but they have different names, proving the point that to say that the soul is somehow the definition of the name is the definition of the soul, that's inaccurate. Because if that would be the case, then a Gilgal will always share the same name. It doesn't work that way. There is a unique connection of even the same soul to each life. There is a unique connection. So even if the soul comes back, not understood so simply as the soul is a thing and it goes up and it comes down, it doesn't work that way. A part of it comes back and it metamorphoses. But even if we were to understand this in the most simple, in the most simplistic way, then the name of the person is not the definition of the soul, but it's a medium that the soul needs to connect to the body. And therefore, if a person, for example, faints, which means that there is a disconnect between the soul and the body, and that's even to the animal soul, to the human soul, there's a weakness, there's a weakening in the connection. So there's two options that you have, and you can use both. One is to strengthen the body, and one is to strengthen the soul, or to strengthen the soul's desire to be here. And one of the ways we do that is by calling the person by their name and their mother's name. Generally, so if someone is ill, so we're going to go ahead and by the Torah, we're going to give a bracha. And what will we say? We will mention the person's name, son or daughter of the mother. And that really helps that person get better because we are evoking, we are calling the neshama. We want the neshama to be connected in this body. It's not uncommon nowadays that when someone, God forbid, is very ill, we don't do this unless there is a real big need in our understanding of big, that we're going to add a name. We add the name Life, Chaya or Chaim. Right, sometimes someone is already called Chaim, Yosef Chaim. I mean, there are different, we add a name. If the name holds for 30 days, then that person has that new name. Why are we adding a name? It's a means of helping that neshama stay better connected to that person. Person meaning body and animal soul. Person. What's very rare nowadays, could be practiced, I'm not aware of it, is that instead of adding a name, we add a letter. And as a rule, especially when it comes to matters of spirit, less is always more. So as potent as adding a name is, adding a letter is greater than adding a name. Avram, and Sarai, the first Jewish couple, were unable to conceive together. Avram had a child that the Torah speaks about, Yishmael, with Hagar. But Avram and Sarai were unable to have a child. And God added the letter He to his name. God removed the Yud from Sarai and in its place put the letter He. That we all read, that's in the Chumash. The premise of this question, all of this is an intro to a topic that I'm going to get to. But just to know, the premise of this question is based on people who understand the mysticism of the letters and how they, what letter will do what. When it comes to the ability of reproducing, of having children, the most potent letter, theoretically, is the letter Yud. Yud is physically the smallest letter. If you could, you would make the Yud into a dot. And a dot represents the infinite. Why does a dot represent the infinite? Because if you were to depict the infinite, what would you do? First of all, most people have a one-sided infinity idea, which has to be corrected, which is easy, which is infinity is very, very, very big, or infinitely big, true. Just as it's infinitely big, it's infinitely small. That's first of all. Second of all, if you want to depict, if you want to write, if you want to design something that's infinitely big, you can't. You don't have enough space. So if you want to make a simen of something that's infinite, the closest you can do is by putting a dot. No, it's something that's beyond space. But if I want to have something to represent that, its closest representative would be the letter Yud. And that's not the point we're trying to make right now. The letter Yud in Kabbalah represents the ability of reproduction, because reproduction is where we partner with infinity, because that's exactly what reproduction is. Reproduction is we somehow channel, it's not us, we are channeling infinity. We're finite, we expire. Looks like we're going to 150 now. Our kids are going to live a long life. It's really changing. I mean, they should be healthy and they should be wealthy. Because having a long life of prolonged suffering is not a blessing. I get that. But that's where it looks like it's going. We're going for long. But there's a limit in the meanwhile. It starts again, which is amazing. And it starts again. And it can go on forever. I know this is not unique to human beings. True, you have the same power in the animal kingdom. You have the same power in vegetation. So what? The koyach of reproducing is the closest that we can see in the world, the power of infinite. Infinite. On the side, in Hasidus and Kabbalah, there is another area in this world where you see infinity. What I'm going to say now is so boring. And where is that? Inconsistency. Like the fact that the heavenly bodies move consistently and they're not weakening. That's another area where, from the finite perspective, it's boring. We want excitement, and we'll pay the price of it being unexcited to have the excitement. Ups and downs, right? Life that we know of is up and down. But something that's infinite, which also means that does not change, is just the same. It's good to know that infinity is very choking. It chokes a person. It chokes the spirit of finite people. Every day, the same thing, same cycle. It doesn't stop. But that's another area in which we can see the koyach of Ein Sof. The Hoylada, reproduction, this is something easier to see, you don't have to be a big chacham, right? Reproduction is the koyach of infinity. If you want to represent the koyach of infinity, you use the letter Yud. This is not just explained, this is a fact in Kabbalah. So the bigger question is that why did God take away her Yud and give her the Hay to Sarai, and then she conceived and gave birth? Doesn't fit the rule. I mean, if you're a doctor, if you're a spiritual doctor, and you know that if someone is having a hard time having children, what you really need to add to them is not the name, it's the Yud. Today they would do it also, but they wouldn't add a Yud so quick. They would add a name that has a Yud in it for people that know what they're doing. And God took away. And furthermore, Hey represents the opposite of the Yud. Yud represents a point, infinity. And the Hay represents expansiveness in all three dimensions. That's why there are three legs to the Hay. Going from infinite to the three-dimensional reality is going from the Yud to the Hay. I'm not going to get too far into it, but these are people that like learning Kabbalah. You heard these words this way or in another way, that with Yud God created Olam Haba, with Hay God created this world. So expansiveness for us is great, but it's not infinite. Expansiveness for us is amazing, but if you're coming from infinity, it's not infinity. It's actually, you're limiting the infinity to it only to be something expansive. From something being not too much, beyond too much, to it being a lot. Is a lot, or is a lot a little? It depends where you're coming from, right? If you're coming from infinite, a lot is horrible. If you're coming from limitation, now there is abundance. That's great. Hay represents expansiveness. If you're coming from the Yud, you're going to the Hay, you're going down a big notch. And even by Avraham, why was he given the letter Hay? Again, even though that he had a child before, that's the question of the Alter Rebbe. Now here is where he's very innovative. And then we'll move on to what I want to speak about. But I'm going to use this as a springboard. And he says something very powerful. that hey, expansiveness means opposites, depending on where you're coming from. If you're coming from Yud, hey is going down. If you're coming from what the Alter Rebbe says is not the Yud that represents infinity, the Yud that represents little constraint, that's a Yud. Small versus I need space. It's too little. If you're coming from the other end of the Yud, then going to the Hey is going up. So you can be at the same place, and the only way to define whether this place is good or bad, more limited or less limited, will have very little to do with where you're at, if at all, will have everything to do with where are you coming from. And we all know that. Right? Almost the comedy of life, that you can be exactly in the same place, in the same position, and in the same place, and every day you'll experience that to be a whole new experience. Why? You're in the same freaking place. Well, it depends where you're coming from. Okay. So he says like this, Sarai, the Yudan Sarai, we're speaking mystically. We're not speaking about her. She's the first Jewish woman. She was the greatest woman. This is not in any way limiting Sarai, the little that we know of her. But on a mystical level, there was something in her. And one way of wording it would be is that she was so grounded in reality. She was so down to earth. Is that she would not, I'm going to begin by using these words, is that she did not want to spend her life fantasizing of what could be. Why should I fantasize? Let me live with what is. Or imagining, or manifesting, or whatever you want to call it. Like, why don't I just live with this is what it is. Let me just live with what is. So she became very limited to what is. With the flip side, which is amazing, how great would it be if we would learn to live with what is? Most people don't even know what that means, because so much of what is currently is so unacceptable by us, by everyone. Is that the way we learned how to deal with it from the beginning until we learn a better way is that we deny it. Mamish, all of us. So we don't even know what is. Sarai had the greatest quality, which is what made her to be a ruler. Sarah means a princess. A princess, I know, can evoke different images. I don't know what's evoking in you, but the princess in the Torah means someone who is a ruler, someone who has a handle over life, instead of someone that's being, in a not good way, ruled over by life. If what I'm saying doesn't work for you, then hopefully I didn't mean it the way you understood it. But let me just, it's so good to be grounded. It's so important to be grounded. It's so important to know what is. And at the right time to accept what is, the right way, not the wrong way, the right way. So they mastered that. To the disadvantage is that what was for her was her inability of having children. And she, let's say, accepted that on some level, lived with that, to the detriment of her not being more expansive as, just because things are the way they are, it doesn't mean that they're always going to be this way. So she needed to go up a notch. She needed to become more expansive. And I'll speak more to that. And that was the hay that God gave her. So God gave her a hay. She was elevated. She went from being more grounded to being more open to possibilities. For her to go into the world of infinity would take away the koyach that she had of being grounded. And you have such people. They're people that live in the clouds. And everything is possible. In certain settings, it's wow, it's amazing. Not for her. But what she needed to be able to have a child is to go up from the lower yud, from the limited yud, from the little yud, into something more expansive. Avram had the opposite than Sarai, like all couples, that they are always opposites. We should make a whole new way of doing shidduchim, not finding people that are compatible. You have to find the people that are the most dislike. And lechatchila river, just go straight into that. And you never know, that might be a good idea, it just came to me.
I would try it. We can test it on me.
Don't sue me, okay. That's the problem with giving advice. Someone else pays the penalty for bad advice. So Avram was so removed from reality. He was the exalted father. He was the opposite of Sarai. He was remote. He was removed. Being removed does not mean that you are unable to physically father children. He had Yishmael. But what we would want from a father is for the father to be involved with. And the level of his capacity of being involved with was not there, which is the disconnect between Avram and Yishmael. And what God wanted for Yitzchak is to have a father and to have a mother and to have a father. And he needed to be brought down. He needed to go away from infinity into something that's expansive, but closer. So actually, Avram and Sarah were brought to the same place. They both were brought to the same place. They were aligned, but they were coming from opposite places. They were going in opposite directions. And when they aligned, that's when she conceived and that's when they had Yitzchak. Don't worry, they did not stay aligned like everyone else. They were human. And there was a lot of discord that the Torah writes. But for Yitzchak to come, there needed to be that moment. Okay, so let's hold this idea about going up. These are words, whoever learns Hasidus learns about this so much. You're going up from below to above. These are the classic words, milmata lamaila, or milmaila lamata. You're coming down from above to below, like the Magen David, right? You're going up and you're going down. Hold this thought for a second. One of the theological challenges that we have, that we all have, is that there are certain mindsets that are in the Torah that are correct, but they contradict one the other to their core. And it boils down all of the biggest paradoxes in Torah and therefore in life. Really, for people that are wiser, they can do a better job, but it comes down to certain basic foundations as an example. Right? Many of us here are striving to upgrade our bitachon. The word bitachon means my feeling of calm, which comes from me feeling safe because of my belief that I'm in God's hands. Believing that I'm in God's hands, we all have on one level or the other. And yet, as we all know, that just because I believe in something, be'emes, it does not mean that I will feel like. Unless a person is so dysfunctional with themselves, since I believe in God, I'm feeling wonderful. When you're not, right, Sada, we have a mother Sada that hopefully will be the remedy to that. That's just denial of where you're at. Bitachin is being able to take your emuna, being able to take your belief, and bringing it down all the way until your heart, which is huge, which is a life's endeavor, which is always in flux. It's the most normal for you to have bitachin one day and for you to lack in bitachin the other day, to check in, where am I at? Am I feeling calm in spite of what appears to be to me as a big challenge ahead of me? Am I calm about it or am I anxious about it? Do I have bitachon? So we're all working on our bitachon. Okay. Having said that, I want to share two opposite perspectives regarding bitachon. Opposites.
But isn't, sorry.
Go ahead.
Isn't anxiety sometimes okay? Like, it's okay to feel anxious. You can ultimately know, like, you can ultimately say, I know it's all going to work out, and I know that whatever happens is in, like, Hashem is leading the way, and it's in my best interest. You can still have anxiety. Like, I could still go into a meeting and be anxious, like, about, I know the outcome's going to be what it's meant to be, but it's okay to have anxiety.
First of all, it's okay, even if I have an unhealthy anxiety. Okay, meaning I have anxiety. For me to say it's not okay, what good will come from that?
Yes,
I acknowledge what you're saying. On top of that, when a person is in a very lofty mode of bitachon, if ever, at that moment, a person will not experience anxiety. The expectation for me to have that level is coming from horrible arrogance that I have about me, at least to acknowledge that I'm a tzaddik and I'm able to have bitachon 24/7. That's arrogance. That's delusional arrogance. Most people understand that there's something holy in me. There's something in me that's human, and I'm in flux the whole time. And therefore, I'm going to just say what you're saying the way I would understand it, that, yeah, actually having anxiety for me is very important because it shatters the delusion of omnipotence that some people can have, that they're tzaddik-like. No, I'm not tzaddik-like. I have anxiety.
Right.
Now, there is levels to anxiety, but let me come back to what I'm getting to, because I'm not minimizing what you're saying, no. But I want to make the following point. Now, tell me if what I'm telling you sounds correct. From the perspective, let me go with your example. Very good. From your perspective, that everything already is in the hands of God, which is true. And that everything that's happening is for my greater good, which is true. Everything. From that perspective, would I want for anything to change? Am I striving to accept reality more as it is premised on, I'm in God's hands? No, make no mistake. I have my responsibility to do my part.
You could also change Hashem's answer.
Wait, one second. So I want to classify the paradox over here. So first of all, whatever I am responsible for, that's already the other part of Shara Bitachon. I'm going to do my part. I'm not going into that area. But after I did my part, however you understand it, I did my part. Right now, what am I praying for? Am I aiming for to be at peace with things the way they are, because they are exactly they are meant to be? Or am I aiming with bitachon that things will be better, things will be good? If someone is sick, does bitachon mean that they have bitachon that they're going to get better? Or does bitachon mean I have bitachon that it is exactly the way it's meant to be? Sick is good. Healthy, good. I'm submitted. I'm surrendered to God, and I'm very calm about it. Which one of these two perspectives are right?
Going forward, I'm going to pray for something better.
You're going to pray for something
Absolutely.
Better. So that means that you are rejecting things the way they are.
I think it's just
one second.
I've accepted what's in the past. Especially, I can't change anything.
That's correct.
Going forward, I will be praying for all my challenges.
Very good. I'm very good. Is there anything wrong? Is it sacrilegious? Is it a misunderstanding to say that on some level, bitachon would mean to be good with the way things are? Being good with the way things are.
Like, was that Rabbi Kiva, just find the best of the situation.
And deeper and deeper and maybe even deeper. In what direction am I heading?
I'm going to follow Sarah's.
I think it's good to be a little delusional to say, yes, this is my situation, but Hashem is, like you said, has infinite power. Why am I settling? There could be so much more. I think that that's okay to say. To say, I'm okay where I am.
I'm not going to debate that. Yes. First of all, yes. The point that I would like to make is that as much as when I learned Shara Bitachin, I actually saw some of that in there. I also read in there the opposite. And it's a problem because it's one or the other. There is something about Bitachin that he writes in there that a person is to... In other words, everything is for my greater good. If I were to really believe, if I were to experience that everything is for my greater good, almost like you said before, anxiety actually is good. I think there's a lot of good that comes from anxiety. A lot of good that comes from not exaggerated anxiety. You're going to be at your best behavior. You're going to be protecting yourself more. Mm-hmm. You're going to be even protecting yourself a little bit from a disappointment that most of us will have. Mm-hmm. When you're certain, when people have the attitude, it's a done deal. Nothing good comes from that. Mm-hmm. People have the humility. It's not a done deal. If it's not a done deal and I want it to happen, well, that's your anxiety. Anxiety is there's a disalignment between what is and that which you would like to be. That's anxiety. Mm-hmm. And you get rid of that anxiety in two ways. Either you get rid of it is that you're so certain, betach. You're so betach that God will give you what you want. Not because you're worthy, but because God is kind, like he writes over there. God is going to give it to you the way you want it. Think about, project some amazing outcome and live in it and sell it. So you're living in there already. The anxiety comes from, but that's not the way it is. Now, some people are able to, for good and bad. You have to know how they apply this to completely detach from the way things are. So they're good because they're not connected. They're living in the future, and halavai it becomes the reality. But they're living in that. But you know when they get anxiety, when they're told no, and they have to, and they're forced to face the disparity between how they would like it to be. That's where there's a break. That break can be anxiety. That break can be depression. That break can be however you experience it. Everyone has their unique experience, but there's something off. Something is off. You feel dissettled. The opposite of bitachon. Bitachon is menucha. Menucha means you're settled. So now there's one way of getting to feeling settled is by having, I would say, the most classic way that people understand shara bitachon is what you're saying. That the past I'm not going to change. I'm not going to spend my time changing that which I cannot change. But I have certainty, terach gut v'tzayin gut, that some illness, that person is going to get better. I'm going to get better. The people that I care about will get better. Everyone will get better. There's going to be good. It's going to be good. And why should I worry about bad? Why am I bringing myself to bad? Just or daven. I'm davening for change. I'm certainly working for change. If not, why would people work? But working, he says, that's my duty. But once I did my duty, now it's in the hands of God. So now it's not about me doing. Now it's about what mindset do I get into. In Shara Bitachin, he also speaks about the concept that a person accepts fully, based on Bitachin, that it is exactly the way it's meant to be. Exactly the way it's meant to be. Gamzul Toiva, here you go to Rabbi Akiva. Nachum ish Gamzul. Gamzul Toiva was Nachum. Rabbi Akiva was that whatever God does, he does it for the good. Which means it's not, this in itself is not good. You know, like kapara. I would rather this than something worse. Wonderful, happy Jewish thoughts. It's going to be bad. The only question is, good is, I'm happy. Why is it could have been worse? Okay. Or, in other words, there is a concept in Bitachon which you're going in the opposite direction, is that you are revealing that what is already the greatest good. If it would have been one iota off, it wouldn't have been good. Let me tell you something. This mindset is a helpful mindset for the past. People learn how to live with their past the right way when they come to the understanding that everything that happened to you in the past, even that which you hated, even that which was horrible, and it should never happen again, and it never will, but now that it already happened, how do I deal with it? I would only be where I am only if that would have happened. If God would have figured out a better way, God would have done it. This is the best way for me to be the way. So you're seeing good, you're accepting it for what it is. But these two mindsets, they go against each other.
Is there a differentiation between what has happened to you and what you have done?
On the highest level, on the deepest, highest level, no. But we have to be very careful when we speak about that, because that's abnegating responsibility. That's not living in the world of freedom of choice.
You're saying no, that whatever you've done is for the best?
That I would say that in the past, one has to view both at what happened to me and at what I did.
You have to take it to a certain extent, even something that happened to you, you have to take. Like, I could say with my divorce, it wasn't my fault. But at the end of the day, I chose this partner. You have to look in the mirror and be held accountable for your end of it.
Correct.
I think that's an important piece.
I'm saying, okay, let me go to that. Accountability. Is it my doing or is it God's doing?
So I think...
1 second. So they work against each other.
Right. So I think that as much as we could say, we look at the past and everything that's happened till now was good, and now we're going to make it better. Whatever has been okay. If we could look at our behaviors and our actions and things that we've caused, and you could do tshuva on those things, you could actually change the past also, which changes the future. So I kind of think that's like a big part of it also, like looking back at your actions and seeing, even just thinking, I should have done that differently, or I could have done better in that. Doesn't that kind of change
the trajectory? Should have, could have, yes. Very good. So should have, could have, which has a truth, is coming from something deeper, and that is that things should be better.
Yeah.
Things should be better.
Right.
And there is my part in it. And let me at least do what I could do to better myself. There is another way of looking at reality, the opposite of that, and that is that everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. Everything. Everything.
I have a question.
Taking less responsibility, though.
It's taking zero responsibility. Uh-huh. 1 second. I want to make one thing very clear. Living with either or is not okay. Mm-hmm. Living with both would be the goal. Mm-hmm. The way we currently live with opposites, for most of us, is that we get into a certain mindset for a certain amount of time. We swing back and forth. We're just not aware of it. And whether it's an external trigger or whether it's something deeper internal that just finds an excuse, and we shift from this to that. But we don't hold both mindsets at the same time because it's impossible, even though it's possible. So there are times that people are going to go into the mode of, I'm not accepting anything, in a good way. Things have to be better on all levels. In that mindset, there's going to be a lot of introspection in me taking responsibility for my part. And that's the easier part because I have power over me, which is very empowering. So the parts of my life which are not the way I would like them to be, well, part of that I have power to change. You know who? Me. I can change me. I'm a chayy. At least you're giving me hope. I don't have power to change you. But for that, I'm going to daven.
Which is the opposite.
Which is all based on the premise. I'm going to use these words. That there is a better reality up there. And we are striving to bring it down. Mm-hmm. That's called the milmaila lamata. There was something greater, better, which is not here yet. Yeah, so let me get to work. And that which is outside my power, let me turn to God. But my mindset is always changing, moving things forward. Forward meaning I have my understanding of how I understand how things should be. Better, healthier, wealthier, more wholesome, knowing where I'm at. And then I'm moving to change. And there is a bitachon in that. The bitachon there would be is, it's gonna, you're gonna succeed. Well, not you. God will make it happen for me. I'm relying on God, and God is gonna make it happen to me. From humility, not because I'm the big tzaddik, because God is the big tzaddik. Then there is the opposite mindset, and that is that things are exactly the way they are meant to be. Things are perfect the way they are. But perfect. I know that I'm not aware of that yet. So my goal is to get into this mindset where more and more it's going to be revealed. That which is will reveal itself to me. That's my understanding of milmata lomaila. Milmata lomaila, we live mata. We're not flying. Milmata lomaila does not mean to get in a rocket ship. It means that which is already here, but concealed, I want for it to become revealed. And when it becomes revealed, like you said, gamzo lotoiva, so when I see the gift in what appeared to be something not good, I accept that part of the world, of myself, of my story, of someone else's, I accept it better because I see the greatness of it. Right? A person has a child that's not well. Like, what's the mindset? So most of us, you know, we don't want to extend ourselves in vain. So if it's an illness that has a cure, the mindset in most cases would be, let me daven for the cure. Let me go to cure. Right? Currently. If a person, let's say, has a Down syndrome child, I'm just repeating the words that I heard from a cousin of mine many years ago that touched me a lot, how when she had a Down, she just was sharing that her experience was her life came to an end. And she shared it a few years in, how at that point she says that this was the biggest blessing in my life.
Because it leads to action. Like, if you think about it, why does all of it happen? What's the point of any? Like, you pray for blessings. Not praying for someone else, but praying for your own life. The only thing we could get from that is us changing our own behaviors, our own mindset, our own action, our own perspective. So really, that's the only thing. Everything just propels you into better actions, more effective.
The first mindset is the propeller to behave better.
Right.
The mindset that things are not the way, things could be better from the way they are right now. Better meaning that I'm going on my premise that I'm the judge, that I'm the understander, and I judge right this here and the now not to be as good as I would like it to be.
So what's the purpose of the other way?
We need to have both, because only both together is the truth. You can go from that perspective. I want to be with the MS.
So is it just like for gratitude?
Well, very good. Very good. See, this is going to be many consequences. Should I be in the mindset of gratitude? Should I be in the mindset of supplication for change? Well, we do both. We do both. Gratitude comes from me being grateful for what is. Supplication is coming from the premise that what is not, I don't like it.
State of life.
I want it to change. If a person is going to only live with the mindset that things are exactly the way they are meant to be, a person can misuse that by not growing, by not changing themselves, by not taking responsibility. On the other hand, if a person is only going to live in the mindset of things are going to get better, things have to get better, what does such a person do when things don't get better? What do you think was the mindset of the, I'm giving just an extreme example, when the Jews were being led to the gas chambers and they were singing, Ani Ma'amin Be'emuna Shleima, that Mashiach is coming. Did they miss the mark? No. No, they didn't. And you know, when it really comes down to it, I want to speak about illness as an example, that I can tell you that what I have witnessed is that when someone has an illness, very few exceptions, most people, that has hope, they're going to go into the bitachon mindset of things have to be better. When people face something in life which they feel that there's nothing they can do, then all they could do is fully embrace it. Fully embrace it. The ultimate embracing it is that God is in everything, and this is exactly what God wants for me. This is what's good for me. Even though to me it tastes bitter, horrible, unbearable. But that's where the direction will go. Very rare, I just want to speak about the very rare do people hold both of these mindsets up in the same place.
I can see it. I can see both of them.
That's good. And that, the Rebbe writes, that is the way he defines redemption. Geula, the Rebbe writes, I'm not talking about outer redemption. Inner redemption, very deep, is when a person is able to see at the same time both of these perspectives. Whatever, however you'll find your paradox, not to be in one or in the other, both. The Rebbe is writing it concerning Lech Lecha, that the Parsha has a double name. And even though we don't put the same vowels on it, because it would not be grammatically correct otherwise. But really, it's the same word repeated twice. And Lech means to go. And it's repeated twice because we have to always go in both directions. Lech, from above to below, which would be this concept of, let me spend some of my time and energy, mindfully or automatically, in changing the world, in making some greater reality come down to the world. There's illness, but people should be healthy. Let me bring health into the world. Let me bring healing into the world. That's one way of going through life. And the opposite way of going through life is coming from another truth, another part of the truth, and that is that things are exactly the way they're meant to be. So what do I want? I want to see the goodness in it. Where are you, God? Doesn't look like you're here, but I know that you're here. So it's not like I want to change something. I want for what is to be revealed, milmata lomaila. I'm going in the opposite direction. And when you get both, you get a miracle. When you get both, the miracle of what we'll call redemption, you're free, you're redeemed, not freed away from reality. No, you're freed in. Remember this: redemption always begins in exile. This is a key of Chassidus. Never, and this is a fact in life. Never that when I'll get out of that situation, then I'll get better. Then you'll get even better. But it has to begin by you getting better inside the mess that you're in, inside your goals. You have to, that's just a fact of life. The redemption has to be in goals. Because if not, there's like two realities. There's good and bad, and they never communicate with each other. And then what's the point? The point is for one to influence the other, and not for bad to influence good in the wrong way. For bad to influence good with what I'm explaining is that really bad is not bad. Bad is bad because we're limited in our understanding. We have to elevate ourselves. Reality is exactly the way it's meant to be. And there is a truth to that. It's not the whole truth. It's part of the truth. And many people I have witnessed go into that world. I have seen it happen when they felt there's no option. This is a fact. It's like a person has a down. Even though I'm not going to say it's an illness. I don't want to insult people. People have different views about this. But I'm saying I'm going back. I'm 57 years old. For people who don't know me, from the world that I came from, it was viewed as no one wanted to have a Down syndrome. And it was like a big challenge. I had a child that needs different care. And it is what it is. If it is what it is, then it's amazing. And it's so easy to say. And it's so great when these words are emes. And the avoida of getting there, the bitachon of getting there, is not the mindset, let me fix something, let me change something. Let me so accept it and see the godliness in it. It's the opposite mindset. Some people who are ill, I know this as a fact, some people who are ill, their bitachon is, I'm going to get better. People that are ill. Some people's bitachon, I have seen this, is accepting that this is the way it is. In the world that we know of right now, just for the record, both will not be here forever.
Both of those mindsets.
Yeah, in other words, everyone dies. Mm. But it's a whole different type of life. and real spiritual guidance is needed as to what mindset to get into. Mm-hmm. What would be the right attitude of, no, this will go away. I believe in miracles, so with a miracle. Or no. It might go away, it might not go away, it doesn't matter. I'm in God's hands and God is running the world. When a person is in a state of complete surrender, it's a whole different mindset. And we all have to live in surrender at the right time. And most of us don't know how to do both at the same time. Either I'm the shaker and the doer. And sometimes, after I felt I'm tired, God, you know what? Now that I ran the show and now it's 6 p.m., God, from now, you're running the show and I surrender. That's most of us. Either or. This and that. Lech lecha. I just want to make that connection that maybe the Alter Rebbe is emphasizing that it's the same letter. It's mamish together. Sarah was going milmata lomaila. Avram was going milmaila lomata. And they held it together. And maybe one person cannot hold it together. Maybe that's a job for a couple. But if they're properly connected, then in the home, together, you have the opposite perspectives properly. Then there's redemption there. Then there's real children there. Healthier children there. Which I think always happens. Ironically, it's funny. It always happens that way. That we adopt the opposite mindset of the spouse on purpose. Because both mindsets are true from a higher perspective. They just need to have vessels. So if you chose to be a vessel for this, you have no room for the other. So the other will make itself known in the other. So when people get frustrated that he or she thinks the opposite than me, we're part of that. In a good and a bad way. You're going to choose to be very benevolent, very chesedic, the other spouse better become more gevuradik. If you choose to be gevuradik, then the other one will be chesedik, and you will be at odds, and that's the way it's meant to be, because the home needs this and that. Perhaps if I can take on both better, then I alleviate the other by having to carry my gevura. Because I chose to be Mr. Chesed, or the opposite. It's almost like we force it on the other. Because we need both. And everything in life is built on a paradox. Everything. I'm saying we spoke more theological, but it goes on every level. There's opposites. And it's comical when we see how we contradict ourselves. That's so healthy. We insist. We see ourselves when we're here to be here, when we're here and we're there, but we're not there at the same time. You know, it's like you can't, you know, you're either facing this way or facing that way. You can't face both ways at the same time physically. But beruchnius, we're meant to do that. That's the goal. To see what's behind you. This idea of the third eye, the concept of the third eye. Lech lecha, that ever writes. You want to get redeemed? Go in both directions. Hold both perspectives. And with God's help, we'll adopt the right one at the right time. The dominant, we have to be worthy of that. Because when we get it wrong, we mess everything up. We mess everything up. Certain things are meant to be the way they are. And we're going in there and we're changing it. From our limitation. We don't know. We're doing the best. Certain things are meant to be changed and we're accepting it. To protect ourselves, we always use both arguments. How many times do we say, accept me for the way I am? And we mean it. And we are angry at the other. What happened to me having to better myself? At that moment, I decided from my ego, it's much better for me to go into part of the truth. And we feel self-righteous because each side is true. See, when one side is false, you win the debate. When both sides are emes, you're not winning the debate. You're right and you're right. You're attacker right. Yeah? We are meant to accept things the way they are. We are meant to change everything in our lives. Go deal with that. Either we explode or we become redeemed. It's one of the two. We're playing with fire. You have to be careful because people that go too deep into it can hurt themselves. Halavai. Halavai, that should be the hurt. But when we get it right, we figure out the inner redemption.
I think the knowledge would come when to use what. If you're aware of both, and you can actually make a conscious decision of when to use what.
Correct.
that would be...
Correct. I would say that halavai, the knowledge comes at the right time. And we should be grateful when the knowledge comes at the right time. I think every person should look back in their lives and also see at times how the knowledge did not come at the right time, even though I thought it did. And that's important. I want to get you calling. It's important for us to see our limitation. It's important for us to see that we won't always get it right. There's a blessing in seeing that. Minimally, that we stay true to who we are. And not, I figured out the formula, and now I know it. That shut off. If we were worthy of getting anything from something bigger than us, that's it. That ruined it. And therefore, I think even the greatest people are destined to make mistakes. And perhaps the greater the person, the greater the mistake. Meaning giving bad advice. I'm not talking about moral mistakes. No, the great people did not do those mistakes. But I'm talking about these types of mistakes, of when to have the right attitude. Or people that are just very much in touch with how they're feeling. And they're just saying, yeah, that's where I'm at right now. Based on the premise that I'm at where I'm supposed to be. Based on that side. So if this is what I'm at, that's what I'm going to deal with. And I'm not even looking to run away from it. Most people run away from something that they're not meant to run away from. And when we're not meant to run away from it, the more we run away from it, the more we stay stuck in it. Actually, many things have to work. It has to play out. But for it to play out in me, I have to be there. And if I don't want it, because it doesn't feel good to me, so I run away from it and I deny it. The more I deny it, the more I'm stuck with that. And sometimes you have to run for the hills. Okay, go figure that out. Well, it's to stay or to go. That's the paradox.
I think when you stay, you're stuck. Like, when you say, okay, I'm here, I'm staying. But it's not a goal to stay there.
To stay in there without having a different experience of being in there is called stuck. But staying in the same place and having a profoundly different experience is a I think, a big part of the beauty of life.
Yeah.
At least for older people. When we're young, we're moving, we're going, we're traveling, we're going to Europe. Don't go to Europe. They hate you there. So now you're going to go to Africa. Okay, but we're going. And then when we lose the koyach to go, so then we convince ourselves, why do I have to go? I can have the same experience. Stay vacation. I heard this word. I laughed. Only in America. Stay vacation. Even better. You have your bed. You have your stuff. Even better. And if a person can take a stay in the same place, and have a vacation, God bless them. I envy that. And they saved a few dollars.
Yeah.
A win. So it's not so posh. Yeah, but you're right. Staying stuck is the worst thing in the world. Question is, are we moving milo lamato, mamato lamilo? What's the movement?
How do you accept the unacceptable, though?
Everyone is going to be challenged with that. And there's no answer to that. It's meant we have to face that which has no solution. We have to.
Even if it's so dark and so bad.
That's part of the human condition right now, and unless a person is completely delusional, or they become alcoholic, so they numb themselves. Every person has to get there. Not to get there to find a solution. No. Part of life is living with a problem. The problem. We shouldn't live with the wrong problem. And if the problem was avoided, promise you, the problem will come back in a different form. And if not in this life, it's going to come back in the next life. There's no escaping that. We're here for a long time. I mean, God made the world 5,700. This is at least we're towards the end. We're not in the beginning. At least that. It feels good that way.
Like you brought up the, you know, Holocaust survivors. How did they have bitachon in those moments?
Amazing, huh? They had. And not only that, I mean, let's go currently. All of the people that came back from Gaza, just a fact, they all came back with God. All of them. Someone should make a study on this.
Yeah.
And on top of that, and observant. Yeah. I'm not even going into the observance. I'm going to read deep. They came back with God. All of them. And they were unable to change anything. Mm-hmm. They accepted. There was some sort of, the way, I mean, I read from the shul, from the pulpit ones, letters that they wrote. Powerful, powerful stuff. How one guy was describing, I wish I can quote his name. Not this from the last time or the prior time. All people that had no God. They had no God. The first time one guy says, this guy was saying, Levi, so beautiful. He was saying that he says he did not grow up in a religious home. He did not grow up in a spiritual home. He says he never thought about God. It's not like these are people that thought. And he describes how they kidnapped him in the first place. He says there was a crack in the ceiling. And he was by himself. So he says, I spoke to the crack in the ceiling and I called it the crack. Quoting his words. Wow. Give it a name. And then they took him to the first tunnel. There was an LED light. So he says, at night I spoke to the light. And then they brought me into a place where it was dark. So this was the first time that I needed to talk. So I said the first time in my life the word Elohim, God. And I began to talk to God. This is a man that puts on tefillin every day. He found God in darkness. And I think all of us, when we face the impossible problem, when we face it, not run from it, that's where we find God. That's where we begin to connect to God. That doesn't mean that we should not change that which we should. There's a lot of wisdom needed. Or it doesn't mean that we should change everything. And everyone has their journey and everyone has their wisdom and everyone does the right thing and everyone does the wrong thing. But the anguish of what do we do with that problem? At least to accept that this is part of life. If we're not going to have that, we missed life. Yeah.
I have a question. I know you have to leave. You're talking about opposites. And you mentioned chesed and gvura. So the woman's role is chesed and the men's role is gvura.
I don't know. Who told you that? It's me. And mystically,
the whole Kabbalah
is men is chesed and woman is gvura. The whole Kabbalah is that men is chesed and women are gvura.
I'm sorry. Men are chesed.
Yes.
And women are this side.
And go figure that. And what do you see in your life? And you have this go.
Yeah.
Keep on going.
So are we supposed to stay in our lane? Or we actually hold the opposites.
The question of the year.
Like we hold the opposites.
There's so many layers to the understanding or the misunderstanding of Chesed and Gevura. On the most practical level, if you'll have a model, that the CEO of the home will be the mother. To run any organization, there has to be boundaries, there has to be Gevura. Healthy, of course. And that gives the man the opportunity to be the fun one. If the man is coming with rules and regulations, then the woman has no option other, if she wants that healthy children, to change her role and to become very compassionate. So I would say that it would be very common, and what many of us saw, is where when the man, right, is angry, has anger, has human issues, all too common, that the woman, to protect her children somehow, she becomes very compassionate. And then the man allows himself to be more strict because the kids are protected from her. And then you go into that spiral where he becomes Mr. Gevura in the wrong way, and she becomes Mrs. Chesed in the wrong way. As a rule, I think in general, parents have to parent. And that doesn't mean being kind. It means being kind when being kind is warranted from a parent. And I think the roles change. I think from all of us, your kids get older, you're going to see your role change. You will change vis-a-vis the children. Big difference between a mother of a 6-month old baby And so what is he going to do? He can't feed. So he gets. So she has to be the kind one.
I'm talking more about a relationship to the man and the woman. Like we have certain roles in a relationship, and the men have certain roles in a relationship. You're supposed to be the keli.
The word gevura would mean, therefore, a keli.
I guess you actually in other words, answered my question.
Okay.
With time, our relationships change.
Yes, they do.
And...
Yes, they do.
Playing the wrong role balances out eventually, hopefully.
Or it doesn't. No, I'm saying that's life. I'm saying.
Yeah.
But halavai, yeah, that's a.
Goals. You could
always
become a better
person
and work on your.
Or it gets worse. I'm saying. It definitely changes.
Yeah, no, I got it. Yeah.
But Rabbi, like, okay, this is a great example of this whole class, right? So you're in a situation, yeah, and the giving and the receiving it's imbalanced, right? So the proactive thing as a woman would be to be a better receiver. Yes. And if things change,
but if you're not receiving anything, what are you? I'm going to shut this off.